The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Part 4, The Yoga of Self-Perfection. Chapter 20, The Intuitive Mind, page 799. The original nature of supermind is the self-conscience and all-conscience of the infinite, of the universal spirit and self in things, organizing on the foundation and according to the character of a direct self-knowledge, its own wisdom and effective omnipotence for the unfolding and the regulated action of the universe and of all things in the universe. It is, we might say, the gnosis of the spirit master of its own cosmos, Atma Jnata Ishvara. As it knows itself, so too it knows all things, for all are only becomings of itself, directly, totally, and from within outward, spontaneously in detail and arrangement, each thing in the truth of itself and its nature, and in its relation to all other things. And it knows similarly all action of its energy in antecedent or cause, and occasion of manifestation and effect or consequence, all things in infinite and in limited potentiality, and in selection of actuality, and in their succession of past, present, and future. The organizing supermind of a divine being in the universe would be a delegation of this omnipotence and omniscience for the purpose and within the scope of his own action and nature and of all that comes into its province. The supermind in an individual would be a similar delegation on whatever scale and within whatever province. But while in the God, this would be a direct and an immediate delegation of a power illimitable in itself and limited only in action, but otherwise unaltered in operation, natural to the being and full and free always, in man, any emergence of the supermind must be a gradual and at first an imperfect creation. And to his customary mind, the activity of an exceptional and supernormal will and knowledge. In the first place, it will not be for him a native power always enjoyed without interruption, but a secret potentiality which has to be discovered, and one for which there are no organs in his present physical or mental system. He has either to evolve a new organ for it, or else to adopt or transform existing ones and make them utilizable for the purpose. He has not merely to uncover the hidden sun of the supermind in the subliminal cavern of his secret being, or remove the cloud of his mental ignorance from its face in the spiritual skies, so that it shall at once shine out in all its glory. His task is much more complex and difficult, because he is an evolutionary being, and by the evolution of nature of which he is a part, he has been constituted with an inferior kind of knowledge. And this inferior, this mental power of knowledge, forms, by its persistent, customary action, an obstacle to a new formation greater than its own nature. A limited mental intelligence enlightening a limited mind of sense and the capacity not always well used of a considerable extension of it by the use of the reason are the powers by which he is at present distinguished from all other terrestrial creatures. This sense mind, this intelligence, This reason, however inadequate, are the instruments in which he has learned to put his trust. And he has erected, by their means, certain foundations, which he is not over-willing to disturb, and has traced limits outside of which he feels all to be confusion, uncertainty, and a perilous adventure. Moreover, the transition to the higher principle means not only a difficult conversion of his whole mind and reason and intelligence, but in a certain sense, a reversal of all their methods. The soul, climbing above a certain critical line of change, sees all its former operations as an inferior and ignorant action, and has to effect another kind of working, which sets out from a different starting point and has quite another kind of initiation of the energy of the being. If an animal mind were called upon to leave consciently the safe ground of sense impulse, sense understanding, and instinct for the perilous adventure of a reasoning intelligence, it might well turn back alarmed and unwilling from the effort. The human mind would here be called upon to make a still greater change, and although self-conscious and adventurous in the circle of its possibility, might well hold this to be beyond the circle and reject the adventure. In fact, the change is only possible if there is first a spiritual development on our present level of consciousness, and it can only be undertaken securely when the mind has become aware of the greater self within, enamored of the infinite, and confident of the presence and guidance of the divine and his Shakti. The problem of this conversion resolves itself at first into a passage through a mediary status and by the help of the one power already at work in the human mind, which we can recognize as something supramental in its nature, or at least in its origin, the faculty of intuition, a power of which we can feel the presence and the workings, and are impressed when it acts by its superior efficiency, light, direct inspiration, and force, but cannot understand or analyze it as we understand or analyze the workings of our reason. The reason understands itself, but not what is beyond it. Of that, it can only make a general figure or representation. The supermind alone can discern the method of its own workings. The power of intuition acts in us at present, for the most part, in a covert manner, secret, and involved in, or mostly veiled, by the action of the reason and the normal intelligence. So far as it emerges into a clear, separate action, it is still occasional, partial, fragmentary, and of an intermittent character. It casts a sudden light. It makes a luminous suggestion, or it throws out a solitary, brilliant clue, or scatters a small number of isolated or related intuitions, lustrous discriminations, inspirations, or revelations, and it leaves the reason, will, mental sense, or intelligence to do what each can or pleases with this seed of succor that has come to them from the depths or the heights of our being. The mental powers immediately proceed to lay hold on these things, and to manipulate and utilize them for our mental or vital purposes, to adapt them to the forms of the inferior knowledge, to coat them up in or infiltrate them with the mental stuff and suggestion, often altering their truth in the process and always limiting their potential force of enlightenment, and by this subdual to the exigencies of the inferior agent. And almost always, they make at once too little and too much of them. Too little by not allowing them time to settle and extend their full power for illumination. Too much by insisting on them, or rather on the form into which the mentality casts them, to the exclusion of the larger truth that the more consistent use of the intuitive faculty might have given. Thus, the intuition intervening in the ordinary mental operations acts in lightning flashes that makes lustrous a space of truth, but is not a steady sunlight illumining securely the whole reach and kingdom of our thought and will and feeling and action. It appears at once that there are two necessary lines of progress which we must follow. And the first is to extend the action of the intuition and make it more constant, more persistent and regular and all-embracing until it is so intimate and normal to our being that it can take up all the action now done by the ordinary mind and assume its place in the whole system. This cannot wholly be done so long as the ordinary mind continues to assert its power of independent action and intervention, or its habit of seizing on the light of the intuition and manipulating it for its own purposes. The higher mentality cannot be complete or secure so long as the inferior intelligence is able to deform it, or even to bring in any of its own intermixture. And either then we must silence altogether the intellect and the intellectual will and the other inferior activities, and leave room only for the intuitive action, or we must lay hold on and transform the lower action by the constant pressure of the intuition. Or else, there must be an alternation and combination of the two methods, if that be the most natural way, or at all possible. The actual process and experience of yoga manifests the possibility of several methods or movements, none of which by itself produces the entire result in practice. However, it may seem at first sight that logically each should or might be adequate. And when we learn to insist on no particular method as exclusively the right one, and leave the whole movement to a greater guidance, we find that the divine Lord of the Yoga commissions his Shakti to use one or the other at different times, and all in combination according to the need and turn of the being and the nature. At first it might seem the straight and right way to silence the mind altogether, to silence the intellect, the mental and personal will, the desire mind and the mind of emotion and sensation, and to allow in that perfect silence the self, the spirit, the divine, to disclose himself and leave him to illuminate the being by the supramental light and power and ananda. And this is indeed a great and powerful discipline. It is the calm and still mind much more readily and with a much greater purity than the mind in agitation and action that opens to the infinite, reflects the spirit, becomes full of the self, and awaits like a consecrated and purified temple the unveiling of the Lord of all our being and nature. It is true also that the freedom of this silence gives a possibility of a larger play of the intuitive being, and admits with less obstruction and turmoil of mental groping and seizing the great intuitions, inspirations, revelations which emerge from within or descend from above. It is, therefore, an immense gain if we can acquire the capacity of always being able at will to command and absolute tranquility and silence of the mind, free from any necessity of mental thought or movement and disturbance, and, based in that silence, allow thought and will and feeling to happen in us only when the Shakti wills it and when it is needful for the divine purpose. It becomes easier then to change the manner and character of the thought and will and feeling. Nevertheless, it is not the fact that by this method the supramental light will immediately replace the lower mind and reflective reason. When the inner action proceeds after the silence, even if it be then a more predominatingly intuitive thought and movement, the old powers will yet interfere, if not from within, then by 100 suggestions from without, and an inferior mentality will mix in, will question or obstruct, or will try to lay hold on the greater movement and to lower or darken or distort or minimize it in the process. Therefore, the necessity of a process of elimination or transformation of the inferior mentality remains always imperative. Or perhaps both at once, an elimination of all that is native to the lower being, its disfiguring accidents, its depreciations of value, its distortions of substance, and all else that the greater truth cannot harbor. And a transformation of the essential things our mind derives from the supermind and spirit, but represents in the manner of the mental ignorance. A second movement is one which comes naturally to those who commence the yoga with the initiative that is proper to the way of bhakti. It is natural to them to reject the intellect and its action and to listen for the voice, wait for the impulsion or the command, the adesha, obey only the idea and will and power of the Lord within themselves, the divine self and Purusha in the heart of the creature, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hrideshe. This is a movement which must tend more and more to intuitivize the whole nature. For the ideas, the will, the impulsions, the feelings which come from the secret Purusha in the heart are of the direct intuitive character. This method is consonant with a certain truth of our nature. The secret self within us is an intuitive self, and this intuitive self is seated in every center of our being, the physical, the nervous, the emotional, the volitional, the conceptual or cognitive, and the higher, more directly spiritual centers. And in each part of our being, it exercises a secret intuitive initiation of our activities, which is received and represented imperfectly by our outer mind and converted into the movements of the ignorance in the external action of these parts of our nature. The heart, or emotional center of the thinking desire mind, is the strongest in the ordinary man. Gathers up, or at least affects, the presentation of things to the consciousness and is the capital of the system. It is from there that the Lord, seated in the heart of all creatures, turns them, mounted on the machine of nature by the maya of the mental ignorance. It is possible then, by referring back all the initiation of our action to this secret intuitive self and spirit, the ever-present Godhead within us, and replacing by its influences the initiations of our personal and mental nature, to get back from the inferior external thought and action to another, internal and intuitive, of a highly spiritualized character. Nevertheless, the result of this movement cannot be complete, because the heart is not the highest center of our being, is not supramental, nor directly moved from the supramental sources. An intuitive thought and action directed from it may be very luminous and intense, but is likely to be limited, even narrow in its intensity, mixed with a lower emotional action, and at the best excited and troubled, rendered unbalanced, or exaggerated by a miraculous or abnormal character in its action, or at least in many of its accompaniments, which is injurious to the harmonized perfection of the being. The aim of our effort at perfection must be to make the spiritual and supramental action no longer a miracle, even if a frequent or constant miracle, or only a luminous intervention of a greater than our natural power, but normal to the being and the very nature and law of its process. Pausing. Top of page 805.